The Chest, The Waters, and The Bones of Gaia. And so the Golden Age came to a swift and terrible end. Death, disease, poverty, crime, famine, and war were now an inevitable and eternal part of humanity's lot. But the Silver Age, as this epoch was to be known, wasn't all despair. It differed from our own in that gods, demigods, and monsters mingled with mankind, interbred with us, and fully involved themselves in our lives. With fire on their side, and now women to allow propagation, as well as a full sense of family and completeness, some of the evils of Pandora's jar were offset. Zeus looked down and saw this. Inside him, the voice of Metis seemed to whisper that nothing he could do would stop humanity from one day standing on its own two feet in more than just the obvious sense. This troubled him deeply. For the meantime, people were duly in awe of the gods and used their newfound affinity with fire to send burnt offerings up to Olympus as a mark of their obedience and devotion. Pandora, the first woman, bore children by Epimetheus, including a daughter, Pyrrha. Prometheus, too, fathered a child, a son called Deucalion, possibly by Prometheus's own mother Clymene, or, if other sources are to be believed, by Hesione, an Oceanid. Not to be confused with the later Hesione, a princess of Troy. And so the race of men and women multiplied. Prometheus, whose gift of foresight never deserted him, foresight but not prophecy, was keenly aware that Zeus's anger had yet to be assuaged. He brought Deucalion up to be prepared for the worst kinds of divine retribution. When the boy was old enough, he taught him the art of building in wood. Together they constructed an enormous chest. The brother Titans were overjoyed when their children Pyrrha and Deucalion fell in love and married. Prometheus and Epimetheus could now think of themselves as patriarchs of a new, independent human dynasty. Yet always there lurked the threat from the Thunderer, brooding on his Olympian throne. Time passed, and humanity continued to breed and spread, in Zeus's eyes more like a plague than the beloved playthings he had once adored. The excuse he needed to visit a second punishment on mankind was furnished by one of their first rulers, Lycaon, king of Arcadia, son of the Pelasgos who gave the Pelasgians their name. This Pelasgos, you recall, had been one of the original clay figures formed by Prometheus and animated by Athena. Lycaon, either to test Zeus's omniscience and discrimination, or for other brutal reasons, killed and roasted the flesh of his own son, Nyctimus, which he served to the god, who had come as a guest to a feast at his palace. Zeus was so revolted by this unspeakably gross act that he brought the boy back to life and turned Lycaon into a wolf. Another English word for a werewolf is lycanthrope, Greek for wolf-man. Nyctimus had little time to reign in his father's stead, however, as his 49 brothers ravaged the land with such violence and behaved so disgustingly that Zeus decided it was time for the whole human experiment to be brought to a close. To that end, he gathered the clouds into a storm so intense that the land was flooded, and all the people of Greece and the Mediterranean world were drowned. All save Deucalion and Pyrrha, who, thanks to the perspicacity of Prometheus, survived the 9 days of high water aboard their wooden chest, which floated safely on the waters. Like good survivalists, they had kept their chest well provisioned with food, drink, and a few useful tools and artifacts, so that when the flood waters finally receded and their raft was able to settle on Mount Parnassus, they could survive in the post-diluvian mud and slime. Mount Parnassus, according to Ovid, at least. Other sources suggest Mount Etna or Mount Athos. Round about the same time, Noah was landing on Mount Ararat. Archaeology confirms, it seems, that there really was a great flood. When the world had dried enough for Pyrrha and Deucalion, who is said to have been 82 years old at this time, to travel safely down the mountainside, they made their way to Delphi, which lies in the valley below Parnassus. There they consulted the oracle of Themis, the prophetic Titaness, whose special quality was an understanding of the right thing to do. O Themis, mother of justice, peace, and order, instruct us, we beseech you, they cried. We are alone in the world now, and too advanced in years to fill this empty world with children. Children of Prometheus and Epimetheus, the oracle intoned, hear my voice and do as I command. Cover your head and throw the bones of your mother over your shoulder. Not a word more could the perplexed couple induce the oracle to utter. My mother was Pandora, said Pyrrha, sitting on the ground, and I must presume she's drowned. Where could I find her bones? My mother is Clymene, said Deucalion, or, if you believe variant sources, she is the Oceanid Hesione. In either case, they are both immortals, and therefore alive, and surely unwilling to give up their bones. We must think, said Pyrrha, the bones of our mother. Can that have another meaning? Our mother's bones. Maternal bones. Think, Deucalion, think! Deucalion covered his head with a folded cloth, sat down next to his wife, whose head was already covered, and pondered the problem with creased brow. Oracles, they always paltered and prevaricated. Moodily, he picked up a rock and sent it rolling down the hillside. Pyrrha grabbed his arm. Our mother! Deucalion stared at her. She had started slapping the ground with the palms of her hands. Gaia! Gaia is mother of us all, she cried. Our mother Earth! These are the bones of our mother. Look! She started to gather up rocks from the ground. Come on! Deucalion got to his feet and scrabbled around, collecting rocks and stones. They made their way across the fields below Delphi, casting rocks and stones behind them, over their shoulders as instructed, but not daring to look back until they had covered many stadia. When they turned, the sight that greeted them filled their hearts with joy. From out of the ground where Pyrrha's stones had landed sprang girls and women, hundreds of them, smiling and healthy and fully formed. From the earth where Deucalion's stones fell, boys and men grew up. And so it was that the old Pelasgians drowned in the great deluge, and the Mediterranean world was repopulated by a new race, descended through Deucalion and Pyrrha from Prometheus, Epimetheus, Pandora, and, most importantly, of course, from Gaia. And that is who we are, a compound of foresight and impulse, of all gifts and of the earth.